It must have been near the middle of the night, when the stars, one and all, were shining and dancing with the sheen of millions and millions of elves, and the sea, down below the cliff, was singing a mighty lullaby, that little Finnan started wide awake, hearing a voice speak. "Cadman," spoke a man who stood beside the sleeping cowherd, "sing me something." Cadman drowsily answered, "I cannot sing anything. Therefore went I away from the mirth and came here, for I know not how to sing." Again the mysterious stranger spoke, "Yet you could sing." And Finnan heard the sleep-bound voice of Cadman ask, "What shall I sing?" "Sing to me," said the stranger, "the beginning of all things." And to mankind since Cadman, the first English poet, English song has been a beacon to all the world. If you open a book written in the English of today, it is easy to read it, just as easy as to understand the speech we use among one another. But the English of 1500 or 1600 years ago would be difficult to read. There is an illustration of this English in a line from Dior's Lament. "Thus aforeoda, this is suame." It is easy to pick this out word for word and see that it means "that was overcome" or "overpassed." So may this be. Though two or three instances of the capture of this beautiful bird in England have been recorded, yet only one is believed to be authentic, so that the rock thrush may be taken to be one of our very rarest visitors. It seldom comes further north than the Vosges Mountains in eastern France. "I had those words engraved on it yesterday, my darling, when I went down into the town for a half hour. The goldsmith has done it well."
"Oh, Arthur," she said, holding the watch to her heart and gazing through and through him as it seemed, "how much more it is this beauteous gift to me that it hath thy face in it. Oh, how much, how is this, Eric Danbold?" she said imperiously and turning sharply, with cheeks burning, to the intruder.
"I cry you pardon, my lady, and you, my lord, captain," replied Eric, who had ridden up and sat bonnet in hand upon his steed. "But 'tis ill crossing the Elfin's ford after nightfall. The water be deep, the way treacherous, and yet perchance more ill is it in me to call you to horse away from my lady."
"Oh, no, faithful Eric," cried the maiden. "Go, go, Arthur! I would not you crossed that ford after nightfall for my soul. 'Tis haunted. Indeed, now I ride with thee to the ford, for I must see thee across safely."
"No, no, my darling," he said. "I could not have you abroad with only two attendants after nightfall, as you will be." But she interrupted passionately.
"I needs must and shall go with thee."
Then he replied with a wild thrill of joy at having her longer with him. "I will consent to your going only upon one condition, that Eric Danbold and his men at arms shall leave me at the ford and guard you back to the castle."
And remembering how often she had been falsely accused of being arch, thought the present a fine opportunity for being really so, and therefore gaily said, "Do not be uneasy, Isabella. James will soon be here."
"Pshaw, my dear creature," she replied, "do not think me such a simpleton as to be always wanting to confine him to my elbow. It would be hideous to be always together. We should be the jest of the place. And so you are going to Northanger. I am amazingly glad of it. It is one of the finest old places in England, I understand. I shall depend upon a most particular description of it."
"You shall certainly have the best in my power to give. But who are you looking for? Are your sisters coming?"
"I am not looking for anybody. One's eyes must be somewhere, and you know what a foolish trick I have of fixing mine. When my thoughts are 100 miles off, I'm amazingly absent. I believe I am the most absent creature in the world. Tilney says it is always the case with minds of a certain stamp."
"But I thought, Isabella, you had something in particular to tell me."
"Oh, yes, and so I have. But here is a proof of what I was saying. My poor head, I had quite forgot it. Well, the thing is this. I have just had a letter from John. You can guess the contents."
"No, indeed I cannot."
"My sweet love, do not be so abominably affected. What can he write about but yourself? You know he is over head and ears in love with you."